In the world of recruiting, some people have seen it all. They build recruiting teams from the ground up, hired hundreds of people in the best companies in the world, developed their expertise year after year. I'm Robin Choi, and I'm on a mission to collect their learnings. These are their stories.
Hey, Garrett. I'm very happy to have you here today. And as we just discussed, I had a lunch with a person who was thinking about specializing their recruiting team. And so I think that's a question that a lot of people have today. How do you train, hire, and help a sourcing team thrive? So I'm very happy to have you here today on iPlayers to talk about that specific topic. Welcome.
Thank you, Robin. Really excited to be here. So it's great getting a chance to talk to you today. I'm very passionate about sourcing and recruiting, and you know, I absolutely love A-players. And so a little about me, maybe to kick things off, I am currently the technical sourcing lead at Grammarly, and I spend my days building out our sourcing function in North America, and I take a lot of pride and joy and satisfaction in doing this. Prior to Grammarly, I spent my prior 7 years working at Google. And while I was at Google, I actually joined Google back when the company was around 35,000 people. And when I ended up leaving Google and joining Grammarly, I left Google when it was around 180,000, including contractors and vendor staff. And so I have a lot of really great memories during this time of scaling and being with really incredible people. While at Google, I spent the majority of my time within the sourcing realm. And I actually really fell in love with sourcing while I was at Google. I also recruited and I spent time sourcing many different roles, from software engineers to site reliability engineers, product managers, from entry level through up to director and VP level at times as well. And so, and prior to Google, I spent my time, actually got into recruiting starting out at an agency in New York City. And I didn't focus on software at the time. I focused more so on interior design and architecture, which was really, really interesting as well. So, and, you know, I love to just discuss like how I not necessarily fell into sourcing, but how I ended up seeking it out and really enjoying it. And so when I graduated from my university years ago, I graduated with an education degree, and I'm a trained teacher by trade. And I was looking for careers where I was able to utilize my background in education, but also follow some passions and I guess family experience. My mother was an amazing and is amazing salesperson. And so I wanted to blend the sales piece with HR and education. And I stumbled upon recruiting. And I ended up starting my career working for an agency in New York City. And I focused on architecture and interior design. And it was a full life cycle role. And what I really want to draw some attention to and shine some light on is that when I was at this agency, a piece of my success was realizing the best recruiters were the ones that found their own candidates and were essentially the best sourcers. Another finding I have from my time at that agency is that recruiters didn't generally like sourcing. And so those are two aspects that I found and I really found very curious. And, you know, I was starting my career out. I was still learning my own sourcing and learning how to do this. And when I was ready to make a move to in-house and I wanted to break into tech, I was very fortunate to land at Google. And my preference and what I told them in the interviews is that I really want to start as a sourcer because I want to learn how to find engineers. I want to be really, really good at that. And then one day I'll go back to recruiting. That was actually my plan at the time. And I started doing it 2 years into the role. I absolutely love sourcing. I actually recruited, did some full life cycle work as well as technical recruiting work at Google for Google Cloud Platform. And then I really miss sourcing. And I hit a point in my career where I'm like, you know what? I want to be an expert in sourcing and I want to be around sourcers and empower sourcers. And I ended up doing some leadership sourcing and ended up making a move eventually to managing people and really fell in love with sourcing and people management. And that's essentially what I'm doing right now. And I find a lot of enjoyment and fulfillment in doing this work.
A lot of people believe, and that's also part of why they believe it will be hard to hire sourcers. A lot of people believe that sourcing is only for entry-level jobs, and it's just a stepping stone to becoming a recruiter and then move on to more of a closing role. What do you say to people that believe this, that believe that sourcing is only for junior people?
My honest thoughts there are if you have that attitude, you probably aren't going to have a successful sourcing team. And so the reason behind that is I fundamentally believe that there are people that are unbelievable recruiters, but actually are more sourcing focused. And so what I mean by that is there are people out here in this industry, and I hope I'm one of them, but I manage and I spend a lot of time with people that are like this in the sense of being very analytical, being very curious, being very process oriented. And those skills can lead to a really powerful sourcer. And there's also people that are closers. There's people that want to close. There's people that don't enjoy the hunt or the search. And so I think distinguishing the difference between a sourcer and recruiter and the different skills is the first step. And the next piece is sourcing is also, I feel like it's a newer industry. It's a newer focused role. You know, like Robin, I know you're in Europe and, you know, I noticed just when you look at sourcing in North America versus sourcing in Europe versus sourcing in APAC, you know, at times companies have very different views of what a sourcer does or what a sourcer is. And so this is a shift that needs to happen in someone's mindset. And once that shift happens and you learn how to really empower and really grow a sourcer, it's going to be so beneficial. And I learned that at Google. First off, if you make sourcing a stepping stone, no one's going to want to do it. And also, you're not really going to attract the right talent and right individual to do that role. And so what I advise is, one, if you understand and see the importance in establishing a sourcing function, then put the right resources into it and also structure and scope the role. So you'll have people that want to do it, that find value and passion in it, and that don't view it as a role where they are only going to want to do for 6 months. What also goes into that mentality and this creation of a sourcing org is where you are as a company. And so the size of a company, the resources a company has all come into account when determining what is the best way you want to structure your staffing team. And so Grammarly in particular, what I love is that, you know, I find that larger companies at times, companies that are over 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 that have the resources are the ones that put resources into sourcing. Grammarly, you know, is a company right now of 800 people, and there's a value and there's a need to have a sourcing function to just scale and streamline and hire the best people. And so what I would advise people, and you mentioned you had lunch with someone today that was questioning the pros and cons of having a sourcer or a sourcing team. What I'll say is, number one, you're going to want to make them even on the same playing field. And what I mean by that is same compensation. People look at that. And two, a similar scope, you know, and the scope's going to be different. Obviously, sourcers are the hunters. They're the face of the company. They're the first people that a candidate speaks to. They're people that can really maintain and build relationships long-term. So you'll get candidates that grow to love your brand and your company before they're even ready to make a move. And two, you have people that are experts at building pipelines. So you have a more consistent way to deliver and fill roles. And then three, there's some people that are just better at sourcing. The way they think, the curiosity, the analytical abilities. I actually, on my team right now, 75% of my team started their careers as recruiting coordinators. And that is something that I noticed over time and I, you know, intentionally even looked for at first. But then once I noticed it and I thought about it, I know so many amazing recruiting coordinators that become sourcers and so many recruiting coordinators that become recruiters. And so there is a method to the madness of the model. There's a reason, you know, we have recruiting coordinators. There's a reason companies have sourcers. And there's also a reason why companies have recruiters. We need people with organization skills, with hunting skills, and with closing skills. And I feel if you combine all three, especially, you know, valuing each one of those components, that's when you really make a magical environment and a machine that really works.
You're mentioning that Grammarly is a company of 800 people, that there is value for them to specialize. Do you think there is a threshold? And I've heard different things. And again, we had on that very podcast, we had Jeff Winter, who said that the first hires in the recruiting team should be in the sourcing team and in the recruiting team. So you should always hire a sourcer and a recruiter from day one. What do you believe? Where do you believe it makes sense to start specializing between sourcers and recruiters?
The company size and goal and product and vision is something that will need to be taken into account. What I will say is, in an ideal environment, if you want to build a balanced team, I would factor in the ratio that you want to have on your team. So for example, if you are hiring your first recruiters and first sourcers for a role, it is beneficial to make sure you have a really core recruiter set in place. And then, you know, in addition to that, it would make sense to factor in a model that you want to operate within. So whether that's a 2-to-1 model or a 3-to-1 model, what that means is 3 recruiters to 1 sourcer or 2 recruiters to 1 sourcer. This is what I see being a really effective way to scale and also you're putting each of those individuals in a situation where they can focus on what they're really good at. So what I would say is, to reiterate, I know you asked me starting out, when is the best time to hire a sourcer and recruiter? I do think it's very wise to understand what each role and each person does. And also determining what type of roles you're looking to fill. Do you have evergreen roles, meaning, you know, roles that are repeatable, continuous roles, or do you have very niche roles? You know, like for evergreen hiring, if you train someone how to find the best talent, you calibrate them to what your company's hiring bar is, and they know exactly what to look for, they can build up a really robust pipeline. And that eventually goes to the recruiter, who's your star recruiter, to close those candidates. And so that is a really great relationship. And I feel that the sooner you establish that, the better a lot can come from. But there isn't, you know, I don't want people to think that they missed the boat on hiring sourcers. Mm. If you find yourself at a company with, you have 10 recruiters supporting the company.
Another question that I have is, so you're mentioning that 3-to-1 ratio or 2-to-1 ratio, meaning 3 recruiters for 1 sourcer or 2 recruiters for 1 sourcer. What's best? How would you pick if you were to join a new company? How would you say the ratio should be 3-to-1, 2-to-1, 1-to-1? Yeah, what do you see? I guess that really depends on the type of roles you're looking for, size of the company again. But do you have any rule of thumb that our listeners can use?
What I would first do is I would take a look at how many roles you have open. So what is your headcount? What are you trying to accomplish quarter after quarter? Once you determine that, I would also try your best to determine what the pass-through rates are. And so really utilizing your historical hiring data. So once you have that, if you can determine that X amount of candidates that go into phone screen phase, move on to onsites, and the X amount of onsites lead to an offer extend, that is the magic formula. And once you have that, you can then resource your team and structure your team appropriately. So what I would say doing is, one, I would try to figure out how many candidates do you need to get into the process to lead you to the end goal. And that end goal being someone joining your company. The benchmarks I like to set would be, you know, especially when you're launching a new sourcing team, and maybe if you've never even done this before, what I would say is to shoot for reach outs that will yield candidates that get into the process. So what I find is the sweet spot is 150 to 200 outreaches a week per sourcer. And then when you're looking at that, you have to factor in what the reply rates are going to be for those candidates. And so the better trained, the better calibrated, the more senior sourcers can become, the better hit rates they're going to achieve. So I would say that the standards that I would give would be, one, reach out. So 150 to 200. Another metric that I would follow is open rate. So like, what percentage of candidates are opening your emails? If you have an 80% open rate, that is the standard. That's what I personally love my teams to shoot for. And then another piece is reply rate. So if you're sending 150 emails to 200 emails, what is your reply rate? And the standard also for more technical roles, and I'm using engineering as the default metric here, would be around that 20 to 25%. And then the last piece, and I find this piece one of the most important pieces, is interest rates. So for example, if you send 100 emails and you get a 10% interest rate, you're speaking to 10 candidates that week. If you have a 5%, you're speaking to 5 candidates. If you have a 1%, you're speaking, you know. So with that said, those are the main indicators that I look for. And so what that means is making sure that your reach outs and your work is really high quality, so candidates really respond well and want to engage.
Okay, so we're about 150 to 200 outreaches a week per sourcer, then 80% open rates, 20 to 25% reply rate. I completely agree with you. And that's what we're saying on HireSuite CRM as well. Then I would probably say that a 10% interest rate is achievable, but probably in the high average, more manageable, or like more markets rate would be about 7%. Would you agree with that as well?
I would agree with that. Okay. I would, yeah. Well, I've noticed for some time now, the percentage that sourcers tend to hover around is around 5%. And so great. Like, I would love that 10% to be the North Star, but yeah, I absolutely see that 5 to 7% is pretty realistic.
And so during this, you get between 10 to 14 candidates per week per sourcer. And then how many recruiters would that be? Would that be one recruiter? So that would be a 1-to-1 ratio. Would that be, how many interviews and how many candidates, new candidates can a recruiter manage per week?
So when you're doing that math, and so like, let's say, you know, you have a sourcer that is putting up these numbers. And what I like to do is set clear guidelines for sourcers. So, you know, these are guidelines, not metrics. I never want to penalize someone for hiring individuals faster than others or with less reach outs. We should be encouraging that and rewarding that. With that said, I think the sweet spot, especially once again on current software engineering roles, would be that 10 to 15 calls a week or 15 to 20 calls a week. And so once you get that down, once you have a source that's consistently generating that like 15 on average calls a week, then, you know, what I like to shoot for is around a 50% pass-through rate. So from those initial recruiter calls that recruiters are doing, 50% of those candidates go into technical phone interviews. And so if you have, let's say you have 20, I'll keep it simple, 20 calls a week, 10 go to technical phone interviews. Then out of those technical phone interviews, you have another, let's say 50% pass-through. And these are generalized percentages I'm giving. That means five candidates are going on site. And then, you know, if you utilize your data, you'll find that perhaps every one in every five candidates gets an offer. Once you have that down, you can then scale out the team. And so, for example, if you need to fill 20 roles and a sourcer is generating, let's say, one or two offer extends a quarter, then you can scale it out to potentially hiring four sourcers to lead to eight offer extends per quarter. And then you can also even have your recruiter source as well to land additional hires there. So that is the model I would go off of. I feel that that's the, you know, building blocks to building a really strong team. But what I would say is, you know, starting out, if you when introducing a sourcer, I would just make sure you understand exactly what you're looking for in that sourcer. And that sourcer knows exactly what they're looking for. You always want to make sure on any given day, if you ask one of your sourcers, what is the end goal? You want to make sure they know the same answer that you feel. But yeah, I'm happy to expand as well.
Would be maybe interesting. So you mentioned one or two extended hires, extended offers per quarter per sourcer. Is that what you were saying, Greg, primarily? It seems, or in the market, it seems low, right?
No, yes. So I was using an example that's not what okay. That's not what I see. The goals I like to see are around five. You know, ideally, you know, a calibrated sourcer can generate between like 5 to 8 offer extends per quarter. And I use offer extends. When I was sourcing in the past, I went off offer accepts. That's how I was metriced. And I see issues in doing that. So with that said, I like offer extends because it's entirely within the sourcer's control to generate that. And what I like to do is factor in the close rate so we can set metrics for sourcers that allow us to hit our offer accept goals through allowing sourcers to be metric off of offer extends.
Okay. And that's also probably interesting. And then we can dive into how to hire these people, how to train them in the early days. Maybe before we go into this, where does the sourcer role stop and what can they do during the interview process that's managed by the recruiter?
You want to make sure that when you hire a sourcer, that you're not hiring them to be a supporting role. And so where it starts is the same place it starts for recruiters at the intake meeting. And so sourcers are looped in, they're integrated. They at times even run the intake meetings because they're the ones that are really hunting and finding these unicorn candidates at times. And so for me, what I view a really good model would be have sourcers start from the very beginning. So what that means is building a strong relationship with their recruiter or recruiters, working with their hiring managers, having the hiring managers discuss everything they're looking for. You know, I always coach my team not to work on roles that they do not understand what to look for. That, to be honest, is just a waste of time. And I want to be really effective with the time that we have in a day. And so with that said, it starts at the intake meeting. It goes into strategizing a sourcing plan, building pipelines, interviewing, running all initial interviews. So any interview that comes before the onsite interview, whether it's phone interviews, whether it's hiring manager screens, fit calls, they organize all that and they sell and pitch all those processes and all those steps. And then they actually hand the candidate off in a really warm introduction email at the onsite stage. So at the onsite stage, they'll prep the candidate for the onsite, and then the recruiter gets a chance to meet and build a rapport with the candidates, and then the recruiter takes that candidate from onsite to the finish line. So another way of looking at it is the sourcers are the openers, and the recruiters are the closers. And that type of distinction, I feel, is a really powerful blend and leads to good results.
There is also the question of having an overlap. Like, do you want sourcers to keep on talking to the candidates until the end? And maybe work hand in hand with the recruiter. What do you think about that? Because there is this very strong initial relationship that goes with finding the person in the first place. So should the sourcer keep that relationship until the end?
What I will say is when I was sourcing, and you know, I started my career off as a full lifecycle recruiter. When I became a sourcer, I had to get used to the handing candidates off. And I found a lot of joy and satisfaction in finding candidates and really finding the best and putting them in the right roles at a company. With that said, when you have good sourcers, when you have sourcers that are really empathetic, that are compassionate, that really want to do the best, organically, the candidates want to stay in touch with them. Yeah. So I've had cases where I've introduced candidates and they have told me, like, Garrett, do you have to introduce me? You know, can we keep working together? And I say, you know, like, my job is to find great people like you. And so this is not the end. This is just, you know, you're working with an amazing recruiter and I'm still here, and reach out to me anytime. And that is how I like to coach my team. And if the machine's operating appropriately and correctly, that candidate's going to want to keep that sourcer updated. And also what I team too is the goal is to get these amazing candidates to our amazing company. And so even after you hand this candidate off, you can still utilize a sourcer's abilities in terms of working with hiring managers to bring them to debriefs. I have my sourcers join all debrief sessions that their candidates are in. And so a sourcer is still involved throughout the finish line. What I'll say is not to abuse the relationship of a sourcer and have them do the scheduling and the work that should fall on recruiters. And that is something that I can say because I was a recruiter before too. But yeah, so in terms of that relationship, it doesn't just end at the onsite stage. You know, you can even work in suggestions in terms of having sourcers send good luck emails before the candidates do final interviews. And so that's what I find. It's not just you work through the onsite stage and that's it. You never, you know, interact anymore. It's a partnership until the end, despite the change in roles.
All right. So I'm pretty sure a lot of people listening to us understand that sourcing is not an entry-level job. And that's also something that we really want to hammer home, that it can be a very strategic role, to the extent that you even said in the introduction that the best recruiters are often the best sourcers as well. So that can be very strategic. There is a lot of work involved. It's not only sending tons of outreach messages on LinkedIn, and that's actually just a small part of the role, because it also covers the intake meeting, the initial relationship, the initial screening call, or initial hiring manager interview. So the topic that we picked originally for this episode was how to build a thriving sourcing team. And I think one of the biggest component of building any thriving team is to have people really understand how strategic their role is and the impact it can have. So a lot of people listening to that episode will understand how strategic a sourcing team can be. Is there anything else that you would advise, anything else that you would say to companies to really help them understand how critical is it to have a very good sourcing team and very talented sourcing team that stays on the long term?
What I'll say, and before going into that, I just want to shed some light on a real situation that happens with recruiters. And, you know, if you don't have a sourcing team, you know, what I generally find is that recruiters don't always enjoy sourcing. And what I feel, my opinion on that, is that they are gold on landing people at the companies. So they're really focused on getting people over the finish line. And so at times it's very difficult to focus on the front, top of funnel, and also on the finish line and closing. And so that's in itself could be a justification to have a sourcer or sourcers. But in terms of how to build a thriving sourcing team, there are five components that I really believe in. One of them is hiring. So you will avoid a lot of issues by hiring the right people. And how I do that is, one, I really take an unbiased view. I listen, I actively listen. And I also find people I love people that have a growth mindset that like to push themselves. I also, when I'm at Grammarly right now, we live by our values, and our values are being ethical, being adaptable, being gritty, being empathetic, and being remarkable. So it stands for eager. And so I look for that in candidates. And so what I would advise people to do is, when they're building a sourcing team, really understand your company values. What are you looking for? And then another piece is onboarding them. So what I find is, you know, for any recruiter, but also sourcer, there's always a calibration period, meaning it might take this individual 3 months to be productive, or even 6 months. So once you know that, the goal is, how do you get these people to be the most productive as fast as possible without burning them out, without losing their trust, and while still supporting them and encouraging them to grow and to make mistakes and learn from them. And so onboarding is massive. That is something that I really believe in. Something that I like to do is, whenever someone new starts, I create a sheet and I have them calibrate. So what I'll do is, I'll show them past hires, and then I'll have them work on roles, and I'll work with them myself, or even utilize, you know, really strong members on my sourcing team to help calibrate these individuals so they know exactly what they're looking for. And then the next piece to that would be goal setting, you know, so making sure it's realistic goals, achievable goals. So I know you asked me, you see two OEs a quarter being the metric. I don't, you know, it's actually much higher than that. However, you know, if someone's brand new to a company, you tell them to hire, have 10 OEs in their first quarter, that is very daunting and it's very difficult. So you have to build up to that, you know, show them the end goal, show them where you want them to be in that 6, 9, 12 month mark and help them get there. And then the fourth piece is empowering them. So, you know, sourcing is not a stepping stone. And if it is at your company, then you have to understand you're not going to get long-term solutions. And you might not even get a great solution, to be quite honest, in my opinion. And so by empowering them, you know, have the role be a role that allows them to really grow the company. Have it be a thought partner role. Have it be a lot of interactions with hiring managers, with recruiters. Have them have an owner, let them have an ownership mentality. Sources also, and the nature of the work is very analytical. It's very relationship building. These people also, you know, as I mentioned, 75% of my current team started off as recruiting coordinators. They're very good at operations. And so what that means is for a startup too, sources can really build processes. So like, even if it's for 10% of their time or 20% of their time. And then the last piece is retention. There's no secret that the longer you stay in a role, generally the better you perform. And I saw this at Google. You know, Google, you know, I remember when I first joined in 2015, it took, I remember there was like a 6 month calibration period. I remember thinking, wow, that is a long time. And so with that said, if you spend all your time training someone for 3 months or 6 months and they leave in 9 months, you just waste so much time. And so understand what how people tick, treat people well, value them, empower them. And my goal is to retain people. But, you know, I tell them too, it's like, I don't expect you to be a sourcer your whole career. I also question, you know, like how I wanted to grow my career. And I love where I'm at right now, but I want to help people figure that out for themselves and also support them. And so there's no reason to trap people on a team, but it's very different retaining someone versus trapping them. I want to say that. And two, have sourcing be a role where they can even come into the company in and learn about how to hire, learn more about themselves, and then help them get where they want to be. Recruiting is such a big industry. There's no reason you need to stay in one place, you know, one role for the duration of your career. And so I think, you know, when I hire people, these are the five components that I really try to tie together. And I really try to lead with empathy and active listening. And I try to, you know, find people that challenge and push me. And so these are the five components that I feel really have worked. And I'm very, you know, I get a lot of satisfaction out of building this way.
Awesome. And there is just one final thing, because you mentioned numbers along the way. You mentioned that it's very hard to get these numbers from the ATS. A lot of companies that want to do the split between sourcers and recruiters, I would expect, have no idea what their pass-through rates are, because if they didn't do that split, maybe they're not mature enough. They don't have enough data on this. How do you build that data as a sourcing team? Do you need to use the same tools, the same software? And yeah, how do you do this? Can you manage with LinkedIn Recruiter, with your ATS? Any advice on this?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I remember when I was starting my recruiting career off, I'm not going to age myself, but we didn't have CRMs. Or if we did, you know, my agency, you know, even early Google days, like I wasn't using a CRM. So what that meant was it was all manual. And even data integrity, you need to rely on a company or a people analytics team to really generate that. Whereas nowadays, you know, like at Grammarly, I use Gem. There's many amazing CRMs, including HireSuite. And the reason I'm so passionate about CRMs is because it allows you to work smart, and it also gives you an ownership mentality. So what I mean by that is when you log onto your CRM, you can see your outreach stats. You can see what percentage of candidates reply, what percentage of candidates are interested. You can also see, you know, various CRMs allow you to also see what links candidates are clicking. So you can really tailor emails for future engagement. And I love to use it for the analytical components. And so I love seeing what pass-through rates look like. I look at the outreach stats, but I also really dive into dashboards. You know, and another piece too is a sequence. I think one of my favorite pieces of CRMs is that you can automate emails. So for example, you can set up sequences where you will engage a candidate 3 to 4 times. And after every email you send, you can set the duration of time that goes by before a second email sends. So it allows you to really build pipelines very smart, in a smart way, but also effective way. And so, yeah, so in terms of like, you know, what I use, LinkedIn Recruiter is great. However, it can lead to burnout. And ATSs are also great, but sometimes they are missing analytical components. And so you don't really know how you're doing. And so that's where a CRM comes into play. CRMs are extremely powerful for, I would say, any stage company, as well as, you know, for sourcers and also recruiters.
Thanks a lot, Garrett. That was my point exactly. Good to read from you. It was great. I believe that a lot of people will learn a ton for that episode, like market practice numbers, how to build a resourcing team, why it's very important to consider, to really consider the sourcing function in a company, align the compensation. So thanks a lot, Garrett. Tons of learnings. And we'll keep on following you on LinkedIn and everywhere.
Thanks, Robin. It was a pleasure being here today.
Hey there, this is Robin. Most of our listeners come from word of mouth, so thanks a lot for your support. And if you enjoyed iPlayers, please keep on sharing it with your team and friends. Stay tuned for the next episode. And if you can't wait, follow me on LinkedIn for more content on recruiting. Talk to you next week.